He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Sunday night, my time, Sunday evening, your time, Raj, by Raj Chapalu. After that Lakers, we'll do air quotes on win. They beat the Utah Jazz by 1 point in Utah. 105-104 is the final. The Lakers were playing without Austin Reaves, and they were playing without D'Angelo Russell, which forced Gabe Vincent into the starting lineup. Scoring explosion from Gabe Vincent. He scored... what did he score?
Oh, 10 points.
10 points. Look at that guy. Double digits for Gabe Vincent.
Yep.
As the Lakers beat the Utah Jazz, we are obviously having this conversation on the heels of a holiday. Raj, did you have a good, nice, long holiday?
Yes, very, very nice holiday. A bunch of Thanksgiving food, macaroni. I always indulge more on the sides and the actual meat, you know, during Thanksgiving. But let me ask you, Anthony, how long after Thanksgiving are Thanksgiving leftovers kind of to you? What's your date of, you know, expiration for that? Because a lot of people have like different days on that. I think Sunday lunch is like probably the most that you can extend it. So I definitely indulged in that. But I'm wondering for you, when is like Thanksgiving leftovers kind of past the due date?
I usually go with Sunday. It kind of depends on for ham, I'll keep eating. Like if you serve ham, I'll keep eating ham well into the next week, like Tuesday or so.
Okay.
For the ham and eggs in the breakfast, or like, you know, ham sandwiches and stuff. So that's a little different. The turkey isn't good fresh when it happens, so I'm not like looking to eat turkey after the fact either. but like the sides, like the only side that I would eat really is as leftovers would be the stuffing. Because that's my favorite. And that's about, I'm not really a big leftover guy. Jen hates it that like I just I'm not really into leftovers. Like I'm pretty extreme on this in the sense that like today, the Vikings played this afternoon at noon my time. So we ordered wings. And we had a buddy of mine who lives in the neighborhood who's also a Vikings fan. We had him over to watch the game. So I ordered enough wings for Jen and me and my buddy. His wife didn't come today. So we had a bunch of extra leftover wings. And I asked Jen, I was like, what do you want to do for dinner? And she's like, we have leftover wings. And I was like, from lunch? Like, no, we need dinner.
Wow. Okay.
So like I'm not really into it. I just don't really like leftovers.
Okay. Yeah. No. So for me, I would save them for sure. If I have like wings, I'll easily save that into the next day. But yeah, so I just indulge in all that stuff. It's weird now, like, you know.
Did you try the cayenne pepper on the
So I did advise that, you know, but the problem is we had so many people coming over that my mom was kind of worried that it would be too spicy for them. So they're like, we'll try it when we make it on our own. So didn't get to add the cayenne pepper, but cranberry sauce, huge fan of that. It's weird that's only a thing that we eat during the holiday break as well. But no, it was nice, indulged in a lot of good food. How about you? Did you enjoy your time at your friend's place?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I'm ready for Avery to go back to school. I've had her at home for all week and well into the weekend, obviously. And she has that like a ton of like pent up energy from not being able to like, you know, do school things and stuff. So
yeah,
I think she's ready to go back to school. I'm ready for her to go back to school. But I'm, you know, it was a good break. And then it's nice because, like, my favorite thing about Thanksgiving is that, like, you go through it. It's like the warm up, right? It's like the last preseason game before the regular season. It's like your tune up. It's your dress rehearsal, because it you know, and during the holidays for me, for Christmas, that's when, like, you actually have good food at the table for Christmas, because, you know, you don't have to throw a turkey out there. I'm a big prime rib guy for the Christmas, either Eve dinner or Christmas dinner. I said this on the show with Lee, because we did Basketball Passport for the first half of the Lakers game. Turkey only looks good when it's taken out of the oven, and everybody, like, marvels at it. It's like, oh, wow, look at that. Well done. And then after that, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right, it's turkey.
I think you're underrating turkey. It's an incredible sandwich meat. Like, it's something that a lot of people, you know, enjoy. Especially when you just mix it with all the other sides, you kind of get the dryness out of it. But I understand from your perspective, that's not a bird you like to eat.
It's just so bland. And the problem also with turkey is that, like, you have the skin that has to stay on the bird, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's going to prevent all seasoning from getting in there unless you, like, stab the bird with a, you know, and inject seasoning into the bird, which I think it might make some sense or whatever. But overall, I'm happy that turkey season is behind us and we can get back to, like, good. Right. Flavorful proteins and meats and stuff like that. But I mean, look, we were just in, like, the bland capital of the world, the Lakers were, as they beat the Utah Jazz 105-104.
Yep.
Raj, I will talk about the rest of the game here in a bit. Gabe Vincent started. We'll talk about your boy JHS, who got out there and played a little bit. But we just witnessed, I think, one of the craziest tanking plays that I think we will ever see. And well, here, I'll just play it. And pardon Billy Mack just going to his go-to, oh my God, oh! Oh!
7 seconds left. Are they going to play it out? They are. With four, with three, with two, Sexton. No, 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 no basket. No basket.
He called a timeout.
They called a timeout.
Why would he call a timeout?
With 1 second left.
Oh! Oh! Billy, what actually happened? Oh!
He just yelled no, 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 like six times live.
Billy, you're a play-by-play guy. You have to tell people what happened there. Imagine poor Stu. Like, it's all you're hearing in your ears. No, no, no. No basket. Unbelievable. Billy, get better at your job.
Oh, man.
So the Phil Hardy. All right. So here's what he was thinking. Normally in that situation, you have to make a decision by about, like, two dribbles after you cross half court. You get to decide, are we going to stick this thing out? We're going to go with the guys that are on the court in that transition or semi-transition, give them that opportunity. Or are you going to try to call the timeout with, like, 5 or so seconds left? And instead, he did the worst thing you could possibly do there, which is wait until there's a second or two left and basically cost your team a bucket and cost your team a win. Because you had the mismatch. Like, you had Rui guarding Sexton in space. You had a Lakers defense that wasn't set. You had everything that you would kind of need in that spot. Will Hardy races up to half court to call timeout. And initially when they blew the whistle, I thought that it was it was a foul on Rui, that like as Sexton was getting by him, he reached out, hand checked him. And I was about to get really kind of upset because I was like, man, you cannot call a game ending hand check. You thought maybe it would be an and one.
Yeah.
In that spot. No, it was Will Hardy making sure that the Utah Jazz capture the flag.
That's what I was going to say. Do you think he just yelled out Cooper flag? Like he didn't even call a timeout. He just Cooper flag.
That was the name of the play that they ran after the timeout.
Right.
All right, guys, we're going to run the Cooper. The what? He's not even on the yet.
Running the CF. What? Yeah, running the Cooper flag. That's what I thought. No, I think what it was again, the decision is confusing because if you watch Utah's half-court offense tonight, Anthony, I mean, they turned the ball over. It felt like every other play, 15 turnovers, and it felt like 30. A lot of them, you know, the Lakers couldn't really capitalize on, I thought. But, yeah, strange to call the timeout there. And I don't think Will Hardy was trying to lose specifically. I mean, head coaches usually don't. Franchises do in a totality, and you know maybe Will Hardy is so good there that he's part of those decisions. But yeah, that was super surprising. Colin Sexton had the switch that he wanted, and you know Sexton looked like you took a game winner away from me. You could tell Will Hardy was kind of telling him on the way to the bench, like, you know, that's my bad. Even more weird part, Anthony, is they didn't even run a set play. Like they're out of timeout after that was just a lot of strange. Again, the ball got to Colin Sexton on a weird play, and I think he got blocked or whatever it was to end it. But yeah, super strange play. I don't know if Cooper Flagg's highlights just flashed before, you know, Will Hardy's eyes before while that ball was going in. But yeah, if it was, you know, rigged, this is something that people would show. Like that's how surprising it was with like 0.1, 0.6, he called the timeout.
He's a good coach, too.
Very good coach. Very good coach.
Excellent coach. Like I
wouldn't make that mistake on
such
like
such a blunder for such a really good coach. It was just like that's what made this like as shocking as it was like Will? Like I half expected Danny Ainge to be calling the freaking timeout there.
Right, yeah. He's like, on the sidelines.
I thought it was Utah Jazz's like skater bro owner who's like, no, guys, whoa. We need to run this one back.
Right.
Because like after the play, like you said, like they drew up like a really weird LeBron, you know, got shaken out of his shoes, but after they inbounded the ball, the guy who inbounded it just walked over there to Sexton, which brought two extra defenders to Sexton when he was shooting it. It wound up being Christian Coloco,
LeBron James,
and Anthony Davis contesting the pull-up three-pointer that Sexton was shooting. By the way, you're down by one. You don't need to shoot a three.
No, not at all.
It was just an absolutely befuddling moment there at the end of the game, and really fortunate for the Lakers here. They couldn't afford to lose this one.
Right. This would be a very different post-game show if they had lost this. If they had lost this game,
laughing as much.
No, not at all. After that Orlando game, and then the you know OKC,
we'd thumping, still be talking about Turkey.
Yes.
Like I would be avoiding that game as much as possible if they had lost that one.
We do cooking turkey.
Because they were up by like what nine
like
points
10.
With like a with were... like a yeah, 9 or 10 with like a minute or so to go.
How do you feel about the just really quick, how do you feel about the I guess running clock with like 6.5 minutes left? I feel like it's a little annoying. The Lakers do it a lot earlier, I feel like, than other teams do. Yeah. Like you watch the other teams do, they still run their offense. Yeah. They walk the dog, Anthony, with like 7.5 left. It's like, what do you're up 8. It's not like you're not up 22. I don't know. I don't know if that's something that JJ's instilled we've seen this actually last year with another coaching staff as well. It's just frustrating to watch. You know, they hold the ball there.
I also just don't like walking the dog. Like I think now that teams have kind of figured it out, like the problem that walking the dog, especially with the way that the Lakers do it, because what most teams do if you're going to walk the dog is you'll roll the ball down the court.
Yeah, right. They just hold it at the foot.
And then you roll the ball down the court and you'll get to like half court. And you'll when you cross up. Half court, you'll still have like 22 seconds on your shot clock left. But with the way that the Lakers do it is that they like put the ball on the other side of the baseline. And right. then like Anthony Davis goes and stands there and I'm like really kind of lucky. They don't call moving screens on this too. He like blocks like a left tackle and the ball just sits there. And the Lakers have to wait, you know, they cross half court with like 16 seconds left in their shot clock. And it puts them way behind the sticks, you know, to use the football analogy there. Just like it's such a weird way that they do it. Like you're talking about, Raj, they're doing it like with not even halfway through the fourth quarter.
Right.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire. Plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Without even like a real respectful lead, you know, like these are still NBA guys on the other side. And you could tell there's a level of just disrespect when you're up 9 and you start doing that. It's like, hey, man, like. Let's keep playing. Like, just, you know, yeah. You know what I mean? There's a level of that goes on too. I don't know. Lakers have got burned by this a few times now. It's just, it's
an annoying. It makes them passive too.
Yeah. It's a terrible process. And again, the offense that it, you know, becomes is very much hold the ball at the top. Let's get the clock down to 5. Let's take a step back 3. And you continually do that. It messes up your offensive flow and it puts the other team in transition. And I think that's what got Utah going as well. They got nothing in the half court, Anthony. Everything was from like long range 3-point misses and they got out and ran and almost stole this game. But thank you to Will Hardy giving the Lakers a little W in the win-loss column there.
Yeah, the LeBron's been rough the last few games and especially late in these games. And, you know, you guys see it there. It's the second bullet. LeBron tonight, 0-9 from 3-point range and was just heaving them. They weren't in any kind of a rhythm. Like he took a few of them where there was no offensive rebounder down there and he's taking these shots and, I always keep an eye on the other guys on the court when he shoots some of these because they aren't going to sell out LeBron, right? Yeah. They aren't going to you know, slump their shoulders and be like, oh. Like, remember that was the moment that I knew that Russ wasn't long for the Lakers. And unfortunately it went for another year after there, but Russ would like shoot these really dumb shots and the other guys on the court would just be like, you know, like just livid or just completely nonplussed on some of the shot selection that he had there. LeBron is shooting some of these, and I am kind of seeing some kind of roll your eyes and get back on defense. Like that was the best we could do there, Ron. You know, and it hurt the Lakers tonight. It got Utah back into the game.
Yeah, and again, I thought a few of those were kind of at the end when, you know, he's obviously in his head. I think he's what missed like 15 or 16 straight threes now. Hasn't made a three since Tuesday in Phoenix. Another game where the Lakers got blown out as well. But yeah, definitely his shot isn't there. And there's some, you know, regression. He was shooting, 45, 46% from three. So LeBron wasn't going to stay at that number. He was going to drop down eventually. You hope it wasn't, you know, all at once. Some of these threes come mixed in here. But yeah, I thought he had a really nice floor game, though. At least 14 assists for him was dicing up the Utah defense with his passing. Again, the shooting just was not there. Still a couple of turnovers I thought were just some. I think the turnovers as of late, Anthony, have been the, you know, big story as well. He's averaging like 6 turnovers a game in the last, I think, 4 or 5 games in the last few weeks here. But definitely his mid-range shot still looks good. So I don't think this jumper is completely gone. It's just the 3-pointer is definitely in his head and he was definitely forcing it. But 12 for 28, 36 minutes on a, you know, the first half of a back-to-back. I think he'll play tomorrow. I think that's, you know, enough minutes there where he could, you know, still play in Minnesota tomorrow. But definitely struggling on the offensive end. And yeah, we didn't help. And Dalton was in foul trouble, so some of that spacing was gone too. We had Gabe and Max out there next to Rui and AD. Thought, you know, Utah was able to kind of shrink the floor there and kind of make it tougher for him to drive. But some of the stuff, like, he can't get calls on drives either. Some of the free throw stuff is strange. Three free throws tonight for LeBron. I thought he drove enough to get a few more of those. So some of that's mixed in this too. But yeah, definitely struggling from three. He'll get back on track eventually. It's just right now, definitely in a slump.
Yeah, I mean, he started the season shooting as well as he did. So
yeah,
he knew that some regression was coming. It just,
right.
You know, regression is mean. Let's see. Oh, Max also, do you want to talk about JHS?
We can do Max first. It's okay, because I could see the energy of Max versus JHS in your face there.
Max looked incredible, Raj. No, Max did play here. He played 30 minutes tonight, scored 12 points, grabbed 5 boards, couple assists, 8 of 10 from the free throw line for Max, mm-hmm. which I did not have him shooting 10 free throws on my bingo card at all this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 3-point shot still kind of struggling there a little bit. The thing that really jumps off of the screen for me when he's out there is his rebounding, because it is so mm-hmm. much better than every other guard that they have. Mm-hmm. Billy loves the way that he goes with two hands.
Yes.
For all of those rebounds. He's been playing really well since he got back into the rotation. And I thought tonight he finishes the night a plus 10 when you compare him to his counterpart, Dalton, who is a minus 19. Big swing there for Max, who, you know, I know Dalton is kind of everybody's, you know, pet and favorite and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when Dalton isn't hitting shots, you can kind of see how rough and how quickly he can get as rough as it does. Max is a significantly better defender, does have that rebounding presence, and this is why, like, I thought he was going to like start at the beginning of the year. So good stuff there from Max.
Yeah, look, hitting on Dalton is a plus and kind of changes a lot of, you know, how the Lakers can move. But I thought, you know, Max Christie being good was just absolutely vital to the Lakers have any success this season.
Yeah.
You're right with the rebounding. He's, you know, he had more free throws, Anthony, than LeBron and AD combined, which I don't think is a, you know, number that anyone would have thought that would happen. But he looks like the game has just slowed down for him. He's taking threes at the right, you know, spots when he's open. He's driving at the right positions. I'll just point out a lot of his success was next to JHS tonight. I thought, you know, Jalen was like finding him, you know, outside and finding him on cuts. But Max was super aggressive. He leverages his physicality as well as anyone, like at our guard positions do, in terms of, you know, just being physical inside. And got to the line off that, taking the mid-range jumpers that I know we both love him taking, instead of having to always settle for the outside shot or always try to dunk on somebody. There's a little middle ground there where I think he is a solid like pull up mid-range shooter if he, you know, kind of goes to that. But yeah, it's like, that's to me the revelation for this team. If Max can be a solid contributor, I think that's so important. He played 30 minutes tonight, which I think is his season high. I would have to look. I don't think he's played more than 30 minutes yet this season, but no, he was awesome. The Lakers don't win this game without him. And I don't know if you agree with this kind of defensive scheme they're doing, Anthony, but we're switching 1 through 4. And, you know, Trudell mentioned that as well on the broadcast. If you're going to switch 1 through 4, you better have some athletes on those positions. And Max Christie is one of those guys. Those guys at the other positions, I'm, you know, a little worried about. But Rui,
the guy who was switched on to Colin and it would have cost the Lakers a game if Will Hardy really, like, really, really, really didn't want to coach Cooper Flagg. Like,
Right. But Max, I thought, was really good. He was aggressive against Lauri. He fought against Walker Kessler inside. Got to see how many rebounds he eventually finished with. Four defensive rebounds. Yeah, 5 rebounds on the night. Max has been good, and this has been trending upwards. Like, ever since the San Antonio game, I feel like he's played really well.
All right, let's talk about JHS.
Yes.
Let's take a, you know, let's compose ourselves here.
Okay.
You don't 13 want the, minutes for JHS tonight. Was a 12, was a plus 12 in those 13 minutes tonight.
Yes.
That led everybody, that plus 12 in those 13 minutes. You mentioned how I like the, that backcourt of JHS and Max Christie. What I will say about it is that that athleticism and that physicality compared to your typical Lakers backcourt, which is Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell or Austin and Dalton, those guys compete defensively, you know, Max and JHS do. And that was, it was, you know, really kind of gave a different look to what the Lakers get normally out of their backcourt.
Yeah, so I'm glad, Anthony. He had three shifts, and I feel like he did well in all three shifts. He had two quick and ones. I was like, oh, man, on the defensive end, him guarding. He fouled John Collins one time, and again, JHS should not be guarding John Collins, so I don't really put a lot of that on him. The other one was in transition. I forgot who got the and one on him. But after that, yeah, super composed, didn't force anything. You know, the previous times when he would get in games, Anthony, and this is the point I try to get across – without trying to look, not trying to be very Stanish right on a player. It's just, I look at a player that's a first round pick that the opportunities that he's getting is in garbage time or in very like, or the magnifying glass is on him, right? So everything he does is just magnified. So usually when he comes to the game, it's like, oh, I gotta shoot. Like, I'm kind of open. I gotta shoot this three. And like, it clangs because he's, number one, he's not a great 3-point shooter, but I like he was super composed, and that's the word that Stu used a lot tonight, and that's something that I saw coming off pick and rolls, and you don't have to do anything flashy, right? Anthony Davis is your screener. So your job is just to read the floor. You read what the defense is doing. That's it. And that's what he did. AD would come set the screen for him. He came off. One time the defender really committed AD, hit his little mid-range floater. The other time he came off, simple bounce pass to AD, hit the shot. Another time he's on the corner when LeBron is driving, got it, swung to Max Christie, who had the mismatch and drove and got fouled. Another one, I think, end of the third quarter, I believe, he got the ball swung to him. Lauri Markkanen was flying at him. He shot fake, drove, and got to the line. It's just – And Utah and the defensive stuff, I thought he really competed and he forced a few turnovers. You saw the one where he stole, I think he forced Keontae George to kind of dribble it out of bounds and gave a little defensive scream. I think that's his path to any type of minutes, and just he's the third string point guard right now. I think that's his path, just guarding really well at the point of attack, being an athlete there, getting deflections. It's clear they're not going to – I think they've kind of passed on him being just a full-time point guard, right? Even with Max Christie, Max was bringing the ball up, and they kind of had him off the ball. I think they really are trying to make him into a shooting guard, which I don't think is his natural role. But, you know, in the NBA, you got to adjust. Either adjust or you're out of the league, and I think that's, you know, where he's getting to. But, yeah, I hope – people kind of saw a little bit of like, hey, you know, this is a guy that did average 22 in our G League place last year in 16 games. This is a guy that has some basketball talent that, you know, as a first rounder, you don't want to just give up on too soon. But very excited. Plus 12. I think that was his highest plus minus so far in his career, you know, with the Lakers. And hopefully, you know, they get some chances here and there. Obviously, you want Austin and D'Lo back as soon as possible. But, you know, hopefully he's able to just stay healthy. It's a guy that has had a lot of injuries so early into his career.
Yeah, the JHS having his rookie option decline, playing well, and then the Lakers having to pay him this offseason if he's still on the roster after this season would be just a hilarious set of circumstances there. For a front office that like continues to just like fumble these, because all right, let's say you pick up the option, and this is what I was told that they were getting ready to do, is that they would pick up only the third year option, not make the decision, because you can technically pick up the fourth year option, you know, back then too. Normally, that's what winds up happening, is that a team will pick up the third and fourth year option on their first round pick. But the Lakers, what I was told is that they were going to pick up the third year option, see how it goes for the rest of the season, and then have that decision to make next year at the same time on the fourth year option, which I was like, okay, it makes sense, you know, confirmed it elsewhere and went with my report and then obviously got it wrong. And I had some people who work in various places around the league reach out, and it was like, look, we don't think he's going to be that great either, but like making that decision that quickly, like this isn't a riskless decision that the Lakers made there when they think that they're getting rid of the risk there. Now he is going to be in trade rumors the rest of the season because he is expiring money now, and you know, get ready for that. I would probably be pretty surprised if he finishes the season with the Lakers for that reason. But this is like, you know, this is why back when this was all going down, our takeaway was like, he'd only played like 21, 22 games when they made that decision on him. And I don't know how good this guy's actually going to be. I'm just talking from strictly asset and resource sure. allocation and management. This, I don't think was the right decision back then. And if he plays well, and then now all of a sudden they have to pay him when they wouldn't have had to going into next season, like then it looks even dumber. Like you have to be pretty spectacularly dumb and bad at your job to put yourself in a position here where you're like rooting against the success of a player because that player's success would now make you look bad.
Right. Yeah. And this is why this also just this is not common around the league. Like first rounders, they not only get many chances with their incumbent team, they also just hop around the league. Just people, yeah. you know, Cam. Expect. But I'm a bridge that way you were talking about, Anthony, because you said you were keeping it with the asset part. And I think we always look at, you know, asset management as just how much we're paying a player, right? We just look at the salary. Yeah. Like what are they in terms of our salary books? But we gave that guy, again, I know people don't follow this as closely as I do, but like the G League is a place that Lakers send their young talent to develop, right? That's a developmental league and teams use it for that. If you look around the league, teams use it for their first rounders. Kobe Bufkin with the Atlanta Hawks got a lot of time in the G League last year. He's now a contributor on their parent team. Jalen got a lot of on-ball reps. I've mentioned the averages, which, you know, people don't have to care about that, 22 a game, but that's not the point here. The point is that he got a lot of minutes on a team, and that's a lot of asset and time that you've invested in a player. To decline the third-year option to me is just like to save some money or to make him expiring when you already have way more than enough, in my opinion, expiring salary on the team. Like there's enough there that you can, you know, move around to get a deal done, but what's done is done now, and we'll see what he becomes. And I don't think a star is gonna burst out if you're anything like that, but usually teams give their own first rounders more time because of how valuable first rounders are spoken about, right? It's like, oh, is he worth two? I don't know, how many all-star games has he made, right? Like that's the conversation that it goes yeah. to. And like a first rounder a year ago where the Lakers went, oh no, we saw enough and 20 games of garbage time and summer league to say we're good. I think that's bad process, even if the result comes out correct. I just think that's a bad process from an organizational perspective. But we'll see what JHS, you know, turns into.